At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified?
Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota bZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander. Or we could do something in between like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So, Toyota is electrified diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
A warmer bubbly blow! Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Ghost Ghost Heaps with myself, Greg Heaps Peterson, now part of the Houston Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you guys. Joining me in segment number two, the pro football doc himself, Dr. David Chow. We're going to be diving in on all the injuries that you need to know prior to the NCAA tournament, because this year feels like there's quite a few of them. Now, a little bit behind the curtain, we did this before we knew that Kevin McCullough was for sure going to be on the fold, but we knew that he was going to be quite banged up. We're going to be talking about how Kansas is going to be dealing with all those injuries. What can we expect out of Braden Smith, Tyler Kolek? I know there are those of you out there in the great state of Wisconsin concerned about their injury front as well. We're going to be addressing all those and just why you don't want to be taking it at face value that a player is going to be playing. You want to gauge how close to 100% these guys are as well. I think that that's very important to do, and Dr. Chow, he's going to do a nice job of explaining that and so much more. And then in the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday, this round of 64 Thursday, as we hit some bank shots. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter /XIMLine at JNN_41. Keep in mind, letters EM, maybe does not matter. So, as per usual, please do send these in the timeline. And the other way, that's via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire or whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via the 5-star review. Did not get in any Twitter /X questions today, but we had a great day of college basketball on Wednesday. Let's take a look back at it. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
Been a bit of a miserable run on the DK Network write-up, so I apologize. And it was a miserable run for Montana State at the end of their game as well. As Montana State, they got up double figures in this game. Looked very good for the write-up, and it looked very good for Montana State being able to survive in advance, but they made like your buddy at the bar and could not close. Grambling gets their first win over a Division I team outside the conference all season long in overtime, 88-81. For Grambling, they go just 4 of 10 from 3, but they dominated the boards, winning that battle 41-27. For Montana State, you had Robert Ford be built for tough, 26 points, 6 boards, 4 assists, goes 6 of 8 from 3, while Brian Garaki goes 4 of 9 from distance. But Grambling, they just kept at it. They were able to overcome that double figure deficit, and they were able to get 19 big points off the bench from Jamel Kofer, who for the season was averaging 2.8 points per contest. So that was big for them. And then in game number 2, it was an almighty slog as Colorado, they outlast Boise State by a count of 60-53. It's a Boise State team that, by the way, was able to make you some good money throughout the season. Boise State against the spread overall for the campaign, they were able to go 16-13-1 against the spread. But for Colorado, they were just able to do enough to be able to get the job done as Boise State brickfest. 2 of 18 from 3-point range, shot 34.5% from the floor. Boise State wins the rebound battle 41-31. They win the turnover battle 12-9, but they just couldn't put the ball in the basket. You had Chibuso Egbo give you 17 points, and really that was it. Meanwhile, Tristan Da Silva, Eddie Lampkin down low, a combined 33 points. Da Silva goes 3 of 6 from 3-point range, and Colorado goes 14 of 15 at the free throw line. So they find a way to be able to get the job done in the NIT. You did see an underwhelming result between VCU and Villanova. Villanova very much has become a bit of an under team here towards back half of the season, but their season is done as VCU, they get it done by a count of 70-61. As for Villanova, they go just 6 of 23 from 3-point range. The offense was not able to get clicking towards back half of the season. And for Villanova, 23 unders to 11 overs this season. Meanwhile, VCU, 21 unders to 15 overs for them, as the man that was able to get it done for them. He got 17 big points off the bench from Joe Beshmeli, so they are able to survive in advance in the NIT, and so does Cincinnati. It took overtime against the Dons of San Francisco, but for Cincinnati, they win by a count of 73-72. If you, like me, had the under, this was a closing total of 144.5. Yeah, that was brutal. As Malik Thomas, he throws in their 31 points for San Francisco. San Francisco plays even up on the glass, even up with regards to turnovers, but for Cincinnati, reason why they win this game, they're able to shoot just a little bit better from 3, 11-30. Meanwhile, San Francisco, while they do go 9 of 22 from 3-point range, overall from the floor, they were only able to shoot about 42.5%. So Cincinnati, alas, they're able to survive in advance. Wake Forest, they get a nice win and cover over Appalachian State, this by a count of 87-76. And it's been a Wake Forest team that has been just a complete night and day different team when they've been at home rather than when they've been in a roadside shooting court setting. As at home this season, Wake Forest 13-4-1 against the spread. For Appalachian State, they go just 7 of 27 from 3-point range. Meanwhile, for Wake Forest, how about Kevin Boopy Miller going a perfect 10 of 10 at the free throw line, 31 points out of him, and then Austin Carr, Efton Reed, a combined 23 rebounds to win that rebound battle by a count of 39-31. So Wake Forest, they advance in the NIT. We saw some CIT action out there as well. You had Tarleton State and Abilene Christian playing on back-to-back days, and Tarleton State, they were up for it, and Abilene Christian was not. 86-59, the final. And for Tarleton State, they have really done a nice job against the spread for you all season long. Tarleton State against the spread is now 20-11, so they did quality work there for Abilene Christian. They go 7-21 from 3-point range, a lose the rebound battle by a count of 36-31. Meanwhile, for Tarleton, four separate guys in double figures. They shoot north of 50% from floor, and for Tarleton, they win the turnover battle by a count of 16-9. You saw a nip and tuck game out there in the CIT as well between Fort Wayne, old IPFW, and Bowling Green. And Fort Wayne at the end, they're able to pull it off, get the job done, 77-75. This after they very nearly blew a 12-point halftime lead. I believe that they had gotten up as high as 13 or so in this game. But for Bowling Green, the 26 points from Marcus Hill, not enough in this one because they go just 5 of 20 from 3-point range. Meanwhile, for Wayne, 10 of 11 at the free throw line, needed every single one of them. For Bowling Green, they lose the turnover battle by a count of 14-12, and they actually lost the rebound battle as well. It's a Fort Wayne team that's had a little bit of a tough time hitting the glass, and they did a very nice job executing on this night. Seton Hall was trying to show why they belonged in the NCAA tournament. Not necessarily the world's greatest showing, but they're able to survive in advance against Old St. Joe's, who did not look like a bunch of average Joe's, by the way. This by a count of 75-72. They needed overtime to be able to pull this one off. And for Seton Hall, it's been a bunch that's had a little bit of a tough time from distance all season long. Went just 9 of 30 from 3-point range, but Elamir Dawes bailed them out. 6 of 14 from 3-point range, 26 points, 10 rebounds. You did have Dylan Adi Awusu, who was able to go 3 of 7 from the outside as well. And for St. Joe's, if they shoot to their average, they certainly would be advancing in this tournament. Just 10 of 38 from distance for them. They lose their turnover battle as well, 16-15, but you did have a pretty good effort from Eric Reynolds. He was able to supply the team with 27 points, and even though St. Joe's, they're unable to get the outright win, they are able to get the cover in this one, and this was a total that was at 147.5. If you got this late, even despite overtime, you were still able to get that under. No, but not this under, though. Indiana State, the old Sycamores, they take down SMU 101-92 as SMU. They were a really good defensive team towards the beginning part of the season, towards back half. Big giant fall off as you had one of the more efficient shooting nights that you're going to see. Jason Kent, 11 of 12 from the floor, 11 of 12 from the free throw line, 35 points on 12 field goal attempts, and Robbie Avila, he had a relatively pedestrian night for his standards in terms of scoring, but did a little bit of everything, 13 points, 8 boards, 7 assists, just 1 turnover, and SMU, they play even up with regards to turnovers, they lose a rebound battle, 36-31, and for SMU, even though they go 10 of 22 from 3-point range, no slowing down the Sycamores of Indiana State. You did see a big upset out there in the CIT as well. Austin Peay was a double-figure favorite against Alabama A&M, and they lose outright, 81-71. This Alabama A&M team, by the way, was 11-22 coming into this game, but for Austin Peay, they just couldn't hit shots. They go 6 of 29 from 3-point range. You had Desi Jones be able to supply the team with 21 points. Now, they had their top scorer, DeMarcus Sharp, for some reason come off the bench. I'm not sure why, but Alabama A&M, they shoot north of 53% from the floor. They do lose the turnover battle by a count of 17-11, but they bludgeon Austin Peay on the glass. I mean, this is embarrassing for Austin Peay. 47-29. So for Alabama A&M, a team that's actually been quite profitable this year against the spread, 20-14, they survive, they advance, and then you saw Bradley take it to Loyola Chicago, 74-62. Final in this one. For Bradley, it got a little bit airy late. They were up by just 2 points with about 6 minutes remaining, but they relatively were able to control this game. As for Loyola Chicago, they go only 6 of 25 from 3-point range. Bradley, they did a nice job with having 4 separate starters be able to give you at least 14 points apiece, including Malevi Leon's 14 points, 10 boards, 5 blocks. For Bradley, they actually do lose a rebound battle by kind of 38-33, but they play even up with regards to turnovers. And for Loyola Chicago, just the inability to be able to hit shots, that really came back to nip them in the tuchus. And if you're looking at college basketball and the trends that we're seeing from these games as of right now, we're still at 51% with regards to the over rate for the season. 2,835 overs, 2,728 unders, with favorites sitting at right around about 50.6%. 2,799, 2,731 with 99 pushes along the way. And if you're looking at the last 7 days in college basketball, it's been a case where the favorites, they have been, shall we say, hit or miss, as right now they are 73-64-4 against the spread in the last 7 days in this stretch, 53.5%, while the over is actually hitting a little bit north of 51%, 71 overs to 68 under. So that's what we're seeing in college basketball right now, and that's what we all got on Wednesday. Now, let's take a look at the injuries that are going to be impacting the NCAA tournament. We'll do so with the pro football doc, David Chow, next, right here on Jessica Six with myself, Greg Peters, and now a part of the producer family podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family, like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified?
Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota bZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander, or we could do something in between like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So, Toyota is electrified diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Just Cousins with myself, Greg H. Peters, and now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is great to be joined by this man as Dr. David Chow. He does an absolutely tremendous job taking a look at so many different things. You know, I'm a little bit better as a pro football doc, but he does an amazing job taking a look at all these injuries in sports. I know that he's out there in the San Diego area. So when Fernando Tatis Jr. was dealing with all this stuff last few years, he was an aforementioned expert on that front. I know that he's doing amazing work taking a look at how these injuries are going to be affecting the NCAA tournament. We're certainly going to be diving in on that front here. And you're able to follow Dr. Chow on Twitter/X at ProFootballDoc all together. And Dr. Chow, it's great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. I mean, you're the college basketball expert. I just know something about injuries. I get it. It's ProFootballDoc. But I've covered basketball, NBA, and even college stuff before. You know more about the ins and outs of college basketball. I just know a little bit about injuries and so
on. You do a tremendous job on that front, and it is a full circle moment as well. A few years ago, I remember I was the producer for your fine podcast. Now, getting you aboard, it's a lot of fun. And before we take a look at some of these just specific injuries, I want to address something first, because it's something that I bring up a ton on this podcast. A lot of people, they assume you just want to take a look at, oh, whether or not a player is in slash out of the fold when it comes to a game. And if they play, you're all good to go on that front. Just take the people through how much an injury and a player going through it can affect them. Because I think that just because a player is ruled in, that doesn't mean that we should be awarding the full amount of points that we typically would with regards to a line in terms of a team's power ranking, what have you. Because there's a lot of injuries that a player can go through, but at the same time, it's going to affect their play out there on the field and prevent them from being less than 100%.
You're absolutely right. And every injury is different. Every player is different. And I'm the first one to say that we're on the outside. It's not insider information. It's insider knowledge from knowing sports medicine and dealing with high-level athletes. So from this insider knowledge perspective, you can look at injuries and know certain things. We're the really only site, Sports Injury Central, that truly does injury analysis as opposed to injury reporting. Let's take, for example, recently, Braden Smith, Purdue point guard, went down in a heap. There was a lot of worry about his right knee ACL non-contact, but he returned to the game. And after the game, it was said, oh, it's his calf, left calf, and he did start the game with a left calf sleeve. We looked at it and said, no, that's still a knee injury. We never thought it was an ACL. And just because he came back in the game doesn't mean that he's 100%. And we were indicating that with his injury, he wouldn't be the same player. Certainly, he played against Wisconsin. They got beat in overtime, but look at his stat line. 7 points in the first half, half his usual total. Second half, nothing, because they probably caught onto a style of play. rebounds half of normal because he wasn't mixing up because he's not as dynamic on his knee. Probably can't drive as much. Looking to dish a lot, which he did. I think he had double-digit assists, which is higher than normal. Good on him. But he also had double the number of turnovers he had. And most importantly, this kid's never in foul trouble. He had four fouls a good portion of the game and fouled out on a charge on a key play in overtime. And game effort on his part, good on him. But that always was a bone bruise that was going to slow him down a little bit on his right knee. So there's a classic example of someone who's returned to play, has no issues, is playing, yet is not 100% himself.
And I think that that's so important to take a look at. And that's something that I did pick up in that game as well, because I, like you were saying, he was doing a good job dishing the ball, but the assertiveness in terms of trying to be able to get points on the board, it certainly was not there. And I do think that that leads into a very interesting point guard that we do need to talk about, as we've got Dr. David Chow, the Pro Football Doc himself, joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. And Tyler Kolek and his injury, that is big time news for Marquette. He has yet to really play here in the month of March. Now, from what I was gathering, him being out in the Big East tournament, if it was absolute do or die, he probably would have been out there. But Marquette, they were in no danger of missing the NCAA tournament. It felt like their seeding was relatively secure. But what's the status that you're gathering with regards to Tyler Kolek coming into the NCAA tournament? Because by all accounts, he should be in. But the question is, how close to 100% might he be?
Well, this is why everyone loves March Madness in the NCAA tournament. This is essentially the Super Bowl. This is these kids' Super Bowls, and everyone, you know, gears up for it. Big East tournament, conference play, that's all important, but it's really all about March Madness, and this is the classic case of this. He's had an oblique injury. It's been about 3 weeks. He's close to 100% from it, and how he hurt it was kind of on an unorthodox-style baseball-type pass where he really torqued his body. What he normally does on the court, I think he's going to be fine. I do agree with your thought process that they were being conservative, saying let's just target him for the NCAA tournament as opposed to the conference tournament. And so I do think he is going to be pretty darn healthy. Our six score has him mid to high 80s, and the only reason we have him at any discount is not so much for the oblique, but because of potentially 3 weeks of rust. That's really the only concern. But otherwise, he really should be good to go.
Yeah, but I always think that that's so important to take a look at this time of year as well, because you'll even notice it with these teams that they played their conference tournament very, very early on. Like we see with Gonzaga, typically they'll come out with their first, second media timeout, they're not so sharp, and then they get back into form. That's just going to happen in general. When you do have a little bit of a longer layoff than some of these teams that might have been playing on Friday, might have been playing on Saturday, they're on their relatively normal rotation. So always important to be able to dive in on there. And then the biggest team in question, in my opinion, and this is part of the reason why I'm going to be fading them for the NCAA tournament, it is Kansas, because they sat out two of their starters when it came to the Big 12 tournament. Hunter Dickinson along Kevin McCullough. And for Kevin McCullough, it's been all year long. I mean, this guy has been in and out of the fold. He has been dealing with nicks, bruises, what have you. I mean, if it has been one thing, it's been another. And then you saw Hunter Dickinson in the back half of the regular season deal with that shoulder issue that he suffered against Houston. What is the status of these two guys moving forward? Because for Kansas, I feel like they might have the most injury concern of any team in the NCAA tournament.
I agree, and they have a lower six score as a team. And at Sports Injury Central, we list the top 36 teams and their six scores. And Kansas has a low one because of these two key players. And let's go through it. McCullers is an all-around, both ends of the floor guy. And that dynamism is going to be affected by his chronic in-out injury status, as you've noticed. Not only in terms of fitness, but also in terms of his dynamic nature. You know, it's one thing to concentrate on. This is what makes basketball so hard, right? In football, you have one job and you can concentrate in certain areas and you can't compensate. Basketball, you got to go both ways and play hard both ways. And something's got to give a little bit. We talked about Braden Smith, his defense giving a little bit, but he tried to keep up his assists. This is a little bit of a concern for us for his dynamic nature. We have him at the low 80s in score. Big guy is more of a concern. He dislocated his shoulder, the Kansas center. Here is the issue. First time dislocation. The coach, of course, said he looks good in non-contact practice. Well, yeah, that makes sense, but this is a contact game. I've always said basketball is a contact sport. It's not a non-contact sport. Basketball is a contact sport. Football is not a contact sport. It is a collision sport. But basketball, there's a lot of contact. Let's take a comp. I get it's not the same, because NBA players have guaranteed contracts. But Julius Randle dislocated his shoulder in end of January and still has not returned for the New York Knicks. Why would that be? First of all, once you dislocate your shoulder, you likely tear your labrum. Can you play through it? Maybe. Football players play through it all the time, but with a harness or a brace on. How effective can a basketball player be if they can't raise their arms up over their heads or away from their body? They're very, very much hampered. So I have my distinct worries about him. His six score is only like 51. May not play, and if he does, at best half effectiveness for the center there, for the big guy. I mean, how is he going to get in there and battle for rebounds, block shots, play defense? Can he score a little bit? Look, he's a big man. He might be able to score a little bit, but will he try and play? Look, this is the Super Bowl. I think he will try and play, right? But how effective, once again, is your question? And I would agree with you from a medical perspective only, Kansas has to be a fade.
Yep, and I'm actually someone that I dislocated my right shoulder when I was in high school as well. I can tell you right now, trying to come back and trying to play a game like basketball after less than a month after that dislocation, that is very, very difficult to do. And I think that he could be able to go out there, but I don't think he's going to be very effective at all. So I am right there in lockstep with you. Going up against an up-tempo team like Samford, I think that that's going to be causing some issues for them. As we do have Dr. David Chow. He does absolutely tremendous work over at Sports Injury Central. And you know him as a pro football doc. He's joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. And I do have to ask you about my home state team in Wisconsin, because they did have a big man in Tyler Wall that dealt with a little bit of an injury towards back half of the Big Ten tournament. Now, really didn't prevent them from making a run in that Big Ten tournament. They make it all the way to the final. They were a game opponent against Illinois. But what's their outlook moving forward? Because Tyler Wall's of a little bit of concern. And I know that there are people concerned about Chucky Hepburn, but I think that just from me watching him and from all the people I've talked to in the great state of Wisconsin, doesn't seem like that should be too much of a concern.
Well, it sounds like you got some good insider information there, and I would go with it. We have no reason from our analysis to doubt what you're saying, that I think health-wise they're going to be okay. Did they benefit from Braden Smith a little bit and getting to the Big Ten final game? Yeah, maybe, but they themselves are actually pretty well off health-wise.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad that you brought up Braden Smith as well, because with Purdue, if they fall to another 16 seed, we've got issues there. And I don't think Braden Smith is going to be fully effective in that game. I think that he's going to try to give it a go, much like he did in the Big Ten tournament. But you were mentioning Braden Smith, his injury a little bit before, how he was becoming a little bit more of a facilitator in that loss against Wisconsin. What are your expectations for him in the NCAA tournament? And what sort of a run would Purdue need to make for him to be able to get a little bit closer to 100%? Because this does feel like an injury that might linger for a few weeks.
Yeah, there's no question. And let's remember, it's two injuries. There's the left calf strain where he started that game where he got hurt with the right knee with a sleeve on. He tweaks that again. And then to us by video has sort of some sort of bone bruise in the right knee that could swell. He's done a great job. He's played the next game. He returned to play that game. He played the next game. And he had a game effort, as we talked about earlier. The good news is that there's no question he's going to play. The bad news is there's no question that he's not 100%. Is he better than he was against Wisconsin? Probably. How far would Purdue have to go before you'd say it's behind him? Remember, there's two issues. There's a bone bruise issue in the knee. In a good case scenario, maybe that's behind him in a couple of weeks. The calf, you know, depends on how severe, and those can really linger. That might be all the way to the Final Four before we get that close to behind him. So at least for this first round of games, you have to look at Braden Smith as less than 100%. And one key place to look is defensively. That's probably the first thing to suffer in terms of when you have a right knee and a left calf, your dynamic nature and be able to react and cover people. That's part of the reason he got into foul trouble. Part of the reason he wasn't able to drive as much and became more of a facilitator. So we think he's going to play, but he's in the low 70s in terms of his six score, 100 and 100%.
Yep, absolutely. I know that you've got your six scores over at Sports Injury Central. And for that Twitter handle, you're able to find that on the old Twitter /X as well over at SIC Score. So I know that you guys do great insight there. And just want to open up the floor a little bit as well, because we've talked a little bit about Kansas. We talked a little bit about Wisconsin, Marquette, Purdue. Are there any other teams of concern / any other players that they might be flying a little bit under the radar that you do have your eye on, and maybe their injuries are they're not being talked about, but you've got a little bit of a lower score on that team as a result that maybe is just getting swept under the rug a little bit more?
I would turn your listeners and followers on to two resources. We have one article at Sports Injury Central, the top 10 injuries that will affect March Madness. And some of those are indeed already covered here, but we go in a little more depth. And like I said, we have the top 36 teams in terms of health scores to look at your matchups as you fill out your brackets and make your picks. I would never say only go by health and injury scores and who you pick. But if it's a toss-up for you, maybe you got to go with the healthier team. If you're already looking at fading Kansas, maybe you're trying to fade them more now, right? If you were worried about Marquette, or maybe thinking Marquette was going to be okay, maybe with our information, you go a little harder on Marquette. That's what I think you should use the injury information for, as an augment to what your thinking and analysis is. And, you know, obviously you do a great job, and people should follow what you're saying and doing, but it's an augment to what you do individually.
Yep, absolutely. I think that that's so important to note. I know that one of the teams that you did list in that article is a team in Northwestern in an 8-9 matchup against Florida Atlantic. So I think that that's good information, as well as we know that Ty Berry is going to be out for the season for them. But they've been dealing with a few additional injuries as well, and that is something that is very much worth noting. And Dr. Chow, I know you're doing an amazing job covering so many different things, obviously, with a name like the Pro Football Doc. You're always looking at football, and that season never, ever ends, but you're doing a great job on the college basketball front. I mentioned it a little bit before. I know that when Fernando Tatis Jr. was dealing with all of his injuries, your man out there in San Diego, you did a great job on that front as well. So let the good people at home know what's all on tap for you and how people are able to follow all of your work over on social media and other platforms.
I started with Pro Football Doc, and I stuck with it because I have 17 years of experience as a head NFL team position. Now, I've worked NBA, I've worked Major League Baseball, I've worked college basketball, I've worked all these different sports, but my experience is not as great as in football. Now, the football experience can and does translate over, but at Sports Injury Central, we have a panel of doctors, including a former Chicago Bulls doctor, and several other doctors as well, that all contribute, and this is how we're able to cover all sports. We have a panel of physicians and guys that follow every game and send me video immediately. We did a nice podcast for college basketball, the Pro Football Doc Sports Injury Central podcast with Jeff Goodman on Monday. And that's obviously another resource for people. The bottom line is we're able to do it as a team effort, and it's all at sportsinjurycentralsicscore.com.
Absolutely. And Jeff Goodman and all the folks over there at the Field of 68, I know that they're doing great work. We all know that Dr. David Chow, the Pro Football Doc himself, he's doing absolutely amazing work, and was tremendous to be able to get him aboard today. And big thanks to Dr. Chow for joining me right here on Cusco Soups, now part of the VSIN family of podcasts. Coming next, the round of 64. It is here. It is that time of the podcast to give you my picks and analysis for every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday as we some bank down.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family, like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
So, should we go electric?
I think we should go electrified with Toyota.
Electrified?
Electrified means options. Yes, we could go all electric with a Toyota BZ4X, but then there are hybrids like Grand Highlander, or we could do something in between like a RAV4 plug-in hybrid.
So, Toyota is electrified diversified?
Yep, and with more options for reducing carbon emissions, the closer we all get to Toyota's Beyond Zero vision for the future.
Exactly how much coffee have you had this morning?
Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family, like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Cuscus Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is always a pleasure to get on David Chow. He is the pro football doc himself, but as you can tell, he's been around so many different games for so long. He knows all about these sports injuries, and I do think that it's a big component to what we're going to be taking a look at here in the NCAA tournament. As I always say on this podcast, it's not just about, oh, is player X, player Y going to play or not? It's how close to 100% they're going to be. Now, obviously, we now know that Kevin McCullough is going to be out of the fold for Kansas, but really good insight there. Was great to be able to get him aboard, and feel like we all got a little bit smarter from that. So, big thanks to Dr. Victor Chow for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Thursday, this round of 64 NCAA College Basketball Thursday, as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter / X feed at JuniorNurse41. This is going to be going in order of pods, so we're going to be starting out with the four games that we're getting in Charlotte, North Carolina, and then the games in Pittsburgh are going to be up next, the games out there in Omaha, Nebraska after that, and then we wrap up in Salt Lake City, Utah. So that's the way that things are going to work, and if we get any unexpected CIT games like we got yesterday, that was very strange. We had those two teams playing in a back-to-back. Those will be games that are going to be listed at the bottom. So let's get things started with this first game of the NCAA tournament, 725-726. Wagner and North Carolina are going to be doing battle, with North Carolina a 25-25.5 point favorite. Total on this game is 133.5. I think we've went a little bit too far with this spread. I did set my line at 22. I'm going to be willing to take the points with Wagner. Now, for Wagner, they have only 7 scholarship players that are going to be healthy for this one, but fortunately, it's not a true back-to-back situation like they were dealing with in the NEC tournament, and this bunch does a really good job of being able to slow things down. They are 360th in all of college basketball in terms of total possessions per game, and this team has really been able to hold up defensively. They do a nice job of taking away the three-point arc. They are going to get completely bludgeoned down low. They've got to go up against Harrison Ingram, Armando Baycott. Both of these guys give you a combined north of 19 rebounds per game. You just don't have anyone that's going to be able to match up on that front for Wagner, but you do have a guy, Melvin Council, that I like. He's able to give you 5-plus boards. He's able to do a nice job supplying the seam with about 13 or so points per contest, so he's done a solid job there, and this is a Wagner team that they don't get loose with the ball. They only turn the ball over about 10 or so times per contest. They do only shoot about 40% from the floor. That's going to be a bit of an issue for a Wagner team that, away from home, they do shoot just 30% from three-point range. They do go up against a North Carolina team that is solid, not amazing from three-point range. Obviously, RJ Davis, he gets it going from distance. He has been absolutely incredible, north of 21 points per contest. And to the credit of North Carolina, they shoot about 35% from three-point range at home. Actually goes up to about 35.7% in a roadside shooting court setting, but this has been a Wagner team that has been able to have their success when they've been away from home. This Wagner team, 45th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis in a roadside shooting court setting. This actually ascends into the top 35, so they do a solid job there in North Carolina. Top 25 team as well. With regards to their points allowed on a per-possession basis, North Carolina does a good job of cutting off the three-point arc, and you know that with all the size of North Carolina, there's not going to be a lot down low for this Wagner team, but Javier Escuera is able to do a nice job doling out the ball. And then when it comes to North Carolina, it's not like the world's most deep team. I like Cormac Ryan, Elliot Cardew, these guys that do a solid job, but I do think that this line has went a little bit too far. Set my line at a 22. I'm willing to take the 25.5 with Wagner, and I do think that North Carolina is going to be able to get their points. I do think that they're going to get second chances, even though this game is going to be quite slowed down. North Carolina is still one of the more up-tempo teams. They're going to find it all of college basketball, 76-plus points in four of their last five games, and even though Wagner has given up fewer than 70 points at each other the last five games, none of those games came against a team like North Carolina. So, did set my total 138. I like the over, and I'm going to be taking the points with Wagner. 727, 728 on the betting board. Let's see those Peacocks, as the St. Peter's Peacocks are going to be playing against Tennessee. Tennessee, a 21.5 point favorite. Totals anywhere between 129 and 130.5. I did set my total 127.5. I'm looking at the under. Tennessee did play quite a few games that were higher scoring out there in the SEC, but St. Peter's is not like a lot of those teams. St. Peter's, they are themselves a top 15 team in all of college basketball in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and this St. Peter's team is going to be looking to slow things down. 324th in all of college basketball in terms of total possessions per game. And if you just look at their total possessions per game in a roadside shoot court setting, they're a bottom 15 team in all of college basketball, so they're even slower when they're away from home. Meanwhile, this has been a Tennessee team that has cranked up the tempo a little bit more, but this is still a team that is very rock solid and very strong with their defense, 14th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. But I do think that St. Peter's is going to be able to hold in there with the way that they hit the glass. A top 35 team with regards to offensive rebound rate, a team that has been one of the best among all mid-majors in terms of their rebound rate. So I did set my line at a 15.5. I'm going to be willing to take the points. Corey Washington coming on as a top flight scorer for the St. Peter's team has been big. He's been able to supply the team with about 16 points per contest. Now, where St. Peter's is going to go wrong is that they're a good rebounding team, but They're a team without a lot of size, and Tennessee, they clearly provide quite a bit of that. You've got someone like Toby Awaka, who's able to do a nice job down low. Jonas Adu has been able to give you about 6 or 7 rebounds per game. Tennessee, one of the top rebound rate teams in all of college basketball, but they're doing it in the SEC. You've got a St. Peter's team that's doing it in a very much smaller conference, being out there in the Metro Atlantic. But for St. Peter's, they also have a guy in Latrell Reed that's relatively versatile. He gives you about 11 points, 4.5 boards, 4.5 assists. He's been able to shoot 35% from three. It's a rough shooting St. Peter's team at about 32.5%, but they've been able to get better as the season has gone along. Meanwhile, Tennessee, they've got Dalton Connect connecting, shooting 39.5% from three, 21 points per game. But just take a look at this Tennessee team, and yeah, they're able to crank up the tempo, but at the same time, at their heart, this is still a team that's able to play relatively slow. They're able to do a nice job locking down on defense. We saw them when they faced off against South Carolina those 2 times. Those were relative slogs with them last time they faced off against a team like South Carolina, winning that game by a count of 66-59. So I do think that things are going to be a little bit more slowed down. St. Peter's going to need to take care of the ball. As Tennessee, they do that. They only turn the ball over 10.5 times for contest. For St. Peter's, more like 13 times for contest. But even though Tennessee is amazing with their defense, they're not generating quite as many turnovers as they did a season ago. They're still solid with that regard. They're still getting in that neighborhood about 8 steals per contest, with having Josiah Jordan James being so versatile, a little bit over a steal, 8.5 points, 6.5 boards, love his game. But I do think that this line has gotten a little bit out of whack, though I do know that St. Peter's going to have a bit of a tough time on the glass. Did set my line at 15.5, going to be willing to take the points, and did set my total 127.5, so I'm going to be going with the under to go along with those points. 729, 730 on the betting board. It is Michigan State, and they play against Mississippi State. Mississippi State, a modest 1-point underdog. Your total on this game, they're between 130 and 130.5, and with Mississippi State, I did set them as a 2-point favorite, so I'm going to be looking at them all right on the money line. I do think that you get a slog as well. This Mississippi State team, they're playing a bit more up-tempo than they did a season ago, but again, I do think that that's a little bit of a byproduct of the competition that they were playing against. When you play in the same conference as the likes of Kentucky, Alabama, just naturally, your total possessions, they are going to be going up. And for Mississippi State, in terms of total possessions per game, this season more around about 166th in all of college basketball. Michigan State, very much in slowdown mode, right around about 289th. But this Mississippi State team does a good job of taking away what Michigan State is going to be looking to do. Hit threes. This Mississippi State team still has been one of the best in all of college basketball, being able to guard the arc, and this team is still going to be able to own down low. You've got Mandy Sissoko for Michigan State, who he gives you about 5.5-6 rebounds per game, but it's a Michigan State team that's well outside the top 100 with regards to rebound rate. Would like to see Xavier Booker continue to come along for the ride a little bit, as it's been a bit of an up and down season for him. But for Mississippi State, 6th in the country in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage, with opponents shooting just 29% from distance against them. Now, for Mississippi State, they do leave a little bit of something to be desired in terms of ball control. Michigan State, they only turn the ball over 10 times per contest, with Ty Walker giving you 18 plus points per contest, AJ Hogard throwing in their 5 assists. So the backcourt advantage is there with Michigan State, but away from home, they do allow opponents to shoot 37.4% from the outside. And this Michigan State team, they just have not been consistent with their defense when they've been on the road, and that's been the last few seasons. Meanwhile, you've got a Mississippi State team that they only allow about 2.6 points more per 100 possessions when they leave home rather than when they are at home. Michigan State, the higher rated team in terms of just total points allowed on a per possession basis, but this team is giving up 14.5 points more per 100 possessions away from home rather than at home. And if you just look at the road numbers, this Mississippi State team has been far better than Michigan State. With Michigan State, even though they do a little bit of a better job of being able to take care of the ball, I just don't know how they're going to be going up against Tolu Smith along Charles Matthews down low. A pair of guys that are able to supply you with a little bit north of 15 rebounds per game. Shaquille Moore has been able to give you a bit from the outside. He and Josh Hubbard both combined to shoot about 36.4% from the outside, and having someone like a DJ Jeffries gives you some versatility, does a nice job in glass as well. I do think that that's going to be a little bit too much for Michigan State. Fully recognize that everyone loves to play up the Tom Izzo narrative, but I mean, since the beginning of the 2006 season, Michigan State just one game above 500 against the spread with Tom Izzo at the helm. I do think that Mississippi State under Chris Jans, who in his own right, very good coach, he's the last coach to knock off UConn in the NCAA tournament. I think that they find a way to get the job done. Did set my line at 2. I'm going to be willing to take Mississippi State on the money line, and did set my total at a 128. I also do like this total under. 731, 732 on the betting board. Colorado State and Texas do battle, and Texas is back to being a 2 to a 2.5 point favorite. Opener was 3. Total on this game is 144, and Colorado State, I did set them as a 1-point favorite. I'm going to be looking at them right on the money line. Just have not been overly impressed by Texas. And just like I was talking about the home and road splits a second ago with Michigan State, Texas certainly has those on defense. In terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, it's a Texas team that for the season, they've been checking in more in that neighborhood of about 89th in all of college basketball, but they allow 20.4 points more per 100 possessions in a road slash court setting rather than at home. And now they have to go up against a Colorado State team that is in the top 50 in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. And they've got an explosive guard in Isaiah Stevens, who, even though Max Asemus is on the flip side, I do think that Stevens is the best guard in this game. 16 points, 7 assists, shoots 44.5% from 3. And for Colorado State, this team in a little bit of a nip and tuck spot, they do shoot a little bit north of 75% the free throw line. They do a relatively solid job on that front. And I do like what Joel Scott and Nique Clifford have been able to bring to the table. They combine to give you 25.5 points, nearly 14 boards. Clifford has been able to give you 3 assists, has all sorts of versatility going against a Texas team that's outside the top 100 with regards to rebound rate. Colorado State, they've had their issues on defense. This Colorado State team is outside the top 100 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. But with Colorado State, something I've noticed with them, their defense has actually been able to travel relatively well, even though they are still checking in just 111th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. They give up just 0.7 of a point more per 100 possessions away from home rather than at home. And while Max Asemus along Tyree Sumner have been very good in the backcourt for Texas, you've got Asemus giving you 17 points, 4.5 assists, shoots 37% from 3. Hunter is able to give you right around about 4.5 assists, 11 points per contest himself. Really outside of Dylan Mitchell is able to give you 7.5 boards per contest. Nobody else gives you north of 5 rebounds per game. You got Brock Cunningham, who, I mean, he's getting a reputation as a little bit of a dirty player. He's been able to give you a little bit down low. And for Texas, they do shoot about 36.2% from 3-point range, but this is also a Texas team that when they're on defense, they give up quite a few open looks from distance as well, allowing opponents to shoot 40.2% from 3-point range in a roadside shooting court setting. Not that Colorado State is necessarily the Mona Lisa Vito of their outside shooting defense, but they allow opponents away from home to shoot 32.1% from distance. I think that Colorado State finds a way to get the job done, and I do think that they bludgeon Texas from the outside. I did set my total 145 as a result, even though Colorado State is outside the top 270 in terms of total possessions per game. I think that they're just going to be flat out efficient in this game, so looking at the over, and I'm looking at Colorado State outright on the money line. Now let's head to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for this sector of game. 733-734 on the betting board. NC State is going to be playing against Texas Tech. Texas Tech is a 5-4.5 point favorite. Your total on this game is between 145.5 and 146. Did set my line at 5. Seeing the 4.5 out there, that's a maximum willing to lay with Texas Tech, but I'm going to be willing to lay it. Been a little bit surprised that Texas Tech hasn't been a bit more efficient on defense in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis while outside the top 75 with that regard. And they do have their home and road splits. They do give up 14.2 points more per 100 possessions away from home rather than at home. But you've got an NC State team that has been outside the top 225 in terms of opponents' three-point shooting percentage all season long. NC State 169th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. The one thing NC State does a nice job of, not turning it over. They're a top 12 team in all of college basketball in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis. And I love what TJ Turner at Porn is able to do. 17 points, 2 assists, shoots 41.5% from the outside. But with NC State, even though DJ Burns has captured the imagination of many, he's still averaging 12.5 points, 4 rebounds per contest. It's not like he's necessarily any sort of a menace down low. And I do think that Texas Tech is going to be able to have some success down low. Now, Warren Washington, he's been out of the fold the last few games. Got to figure that if he does play in any sort of capacity in this game, it's going to be very limited. But love what you're able to get out of Darion Williams. 11.5 points, 7.5 boards, 2.5 assists, shooting 46% from 3-point range. You just don't have anyone on NC State that's quite like that. And the overall backcourt play, I do think, wins out here. Pops Isaacs, Joe Chusson, these two guys combined for nearly 8 assists per contest. Both of these guys not shooting it amazing from 3. They both only shoot about 30% from the outside. But that's why you do have Williams, who shoots it so well from 3. Kerwin Walton is shooting 47% from the outside. It's a Texas Tech team that's found a really good way of just being able to manufacture offense. And this is a Texas Tech team that actually shoots the ball far better away from home rather than at home. At home, they were hardly shooting above 34% from 3-point range. Away from home, they shoot 38.8%. from three-point range. That is the number four mark in all of college basketball, and I think that that's going to be tough for an NC State defense as outside the top 225 in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage to go up against Texas Tech. They do allow opponents to shoot about 36% from the outside when they're away from home, but I do think that Texas Tech finds a way to be able to get it done with NC State. They're a relatively mid-tempo team that they'll give up their points, but they're going to score them as well, so it's an interesting circumstance with regards to total. I did set mine at a 147. I do think that this is going to be snug enough for some late game fouling, so I do like this total over, and with Texas Tech, willing to lay up to 4.5 with them. 735, 736 on the betting board. It is Kentucky, and they're going to be playing against Oakland. Oakland is an underdog of 13.5 points. Totals between 161.5 and 163. I just could not get there with Oakland. This is a Kentucky team that I wanted to fade, but I had to make them a 15.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay it. Oakland just does not do a very good job of being able to guard the three-pointer. Now, interestingly, Oakland actually gives up right around 10 points fewer per 100 possessions away from home rather than when they are at home, but 230th in all of college basketball in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage for Oakland going up against a Kentucky team as in the top 10 nationally in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, fewest turnovers on a per-possession basis, and also their overall three-point shooting percentage, shooting north of 40% from three. As a matter of fact, number one in all of college basketball falls down to about 39.6% from three-point, but still, they're the top team in the NCAA tournament in terms of hitting threes when they're away from home, and I really do like the game of Reed Sheppard, really one of the few guys on Kentucky that's going to give you a defensive effort, 12.5 points, and each of your top three scorers on this Kentucky team shooting above 44% from three-point. That includes 20-point-per-game scorer Antonio Reeves, and on the flip side, you got a Oakland team that I just think that they're really up against it. I like the versatility of Trey Townsend. He's able to give you about 17 points, throws in there about 8 boards per contest, but for Oakland, this team just really does not have a lot of good defensive attributes. They're really not generating a lot of turnovers. They collective shoot about 75% of the free throw line, which that would be meaningful if this was going to be a close game, but I just flat out don't think that it is going to be. Jack Golke has been able to shoot about 37% from the outside, and this is a Kentucky team that has their issues with regards to their defense. They're well outside the top 130 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but the one thing that Kentucky does a relatively solid job of on defense is guard the arc. They allow opponents to shoot only about 32.6% from three. That goes up to about 34% away from home, but that's a top 125 mark in all of college basketball going up against an Oakland unit that they very much do have a little bit of a lifeblood shooting it from three, as nobody outside of Townsend gives you north of 4.5 rebounds per game. With having guys like Aaron Bradshaw, Big Z, I think that Kentucky is going to be able to win that battle down low. They are the far better team from the outside, especially with Trey Mitchell also being able to play some inside-out basketball, 10.5 points, 7 boards, love what he's able to bring to the table for this team. And Kentucky actually one of the best teams in terms of blocking shots at the rim as well. That'll force Oakland to settle for some mid-range jumpers, and I don't think that that's going to work out too well for them. I think that both of these teams are going to be looking to crank up the tempo. Oakland has been a little bit slower, but can be sped up at any given moment. I did set my total at a 163.5. I like the over. And with Kentucky, set them as a 15.5 point favorite, so I'm going to be willing to lay the number 737, 738 on the betting board. It is Oregon, and they're going to be playing against South Carolina. This is a pick'em game with, in some books, Oregon a 1 point favorite, totals between 133 and 134. I did set South Carolina as the favorite of 3.5 points, so I'm going to be taking them on this rather pick'em line. South Carolina doesn't do one thing great. They're inside, though, the top 100 in terms of points scored and points allowed on a per-possession basis, along with their rebound rate. They do a relatively okay job at being able to guard the three-point arc, as well as in terms of opponents' three-point shooting percentage away from home. They allow opponents to shoot about 33% from three. That's right around, again, 100th in all of college basketball. Meanwhile, this Oregon team has really been giving it up from three-point range away from home. Opponents shoot 36.3% from three-point range, and both of these teams do a relatively solid job of taking care of the ball. Both of these teams turn the ball over about 10.5 times per contest. Oregon plays with a little bit more tempo and pace, but for South Carolina, what has been so big for this bunch, Colm Murray-Boyles, and just the way that he has been able to help this team ascend towards back half of the season. He's now been able to supply the team with at least 7 rebounds in each of their last 6 games. He has put up at least 11 points in 4 of their last 5 games. He's been the low post presence that the team has been looking for. Now, he's going to have his hands full going up against a little bit of a taller and just stronger in general in Fali Dante. He dealt with injuries to begin the season. He's been able to supply you with 16 points, 8.5 boards, nearly 2 blocks per contest, but it is an Oregon team that looks to be able to run good, efficient offense. They're right around 100th in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, but they're far from an amazing three-point shooting team. Your top 5 scorers all shoot below 35% for three-point range. Jackson Shellstead, Jermaine Cuisinart, the former South Carolina Gamecock, they combine for about 20.5 points per contest, and Even though Oregon does a relatively solid job of being able to take care of the ball, they don't necessarily generate a lot of turnovers themselves. Meanwhile, Tylan Cooper, he's a very efficient guard for South Carolina, 4.2 assists, 1.2 turnovers per contest, while Michi Johnson is a nice go-to scorer, giving you about 14 points per contest. South Carolina, not an amazing team in any just sort of facet, but it just feels like they're a little bit more balanced and better at being balanced than this Oregon team is. Oregon playing some of their best basketball right now, but South Carolina, other than games against Auburn, because Auburn has just been their absolute kryptonite, this team has been able to hold up defensively every step along the way, and I do think that they're going to get this game bogged down a little bit more, and I do think that they find a way to get the job done. I'm going to be willing to take South Carolina on this pick-up line. Did set my total 133.5, or between a 133 and a 134. Personally, I would rather have the 134 under with the way that South Carolina has been able to slow down games, so I like the under, and I like South Carolina on this pick-up line. 739, 740 on the betting board. Creighton and Akron are going to be doing battle, and this is the DK Network write-up pick. We will look to do better with these write-ups now that we're in the NCAA tournament, with Akron being a 11.5 to a 12.5 point underdog. With your total, it is 141 to 141.5. Right up here is on Akron. In my personal bracket, for those that listened to the bracket podcast I did a few days ago, I actually advanced Akron on the bracket. Now, was not frisky enough to get with the money line, and I would not write up a like plus 650 money line. But that said, I do take a look at this Akron team. I think that they're very live in this game. I set my line at 8.5, so getting north of 12 in a lot of spots. I think that this has just gone too far, and I think that this is a bad matchup in general for a Creighton team that doesn't have a lot of depth. Other than Fran Farabello, you don't have anyone off the bench giving you north of about 9.5 to 10 minutes per contest with Creighton. This is a bottom five team in all of college basketball in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. This will allow Akron to be able to get in their sets and really run things through their main man, Enrique Freeman. He is the nation's leader in rebounds, 18.5 points, 12.9 boards, 1.8 blocks per contest on 37% three-point shooting. The backcourt leaves a little bit of something to be desired, but this team does shoot it relatively well from three-point range with Greg Dribble along with Sammy Hunter supplying you with about 19.5 points per contest. Both shoot about 36.5% from three-point range in a nip-and-tuck game. It's an Akron team that has each other top five scorers, shooting at least 72.8% at the free throw line. And for Creighton, they would be violating copyright infringement if they open up a restaurant, because it's five guys. And I love Ryan Kalkbrenner, Baylor Shireman, Trey Alexander. They combine for about 52.5 to 53 points per contest. They all give you at least 5.7 rebounds per game as well. But Akron, in terms of their road rebound rate, top 40 team in all of college basketball. Creighton is outside the top 50, and with this Creighton bunch, among their top four scorers, only Baylor Shireman shoots about 33.5% from three, going up against an Akron team that's 14th in all of college basketball in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage. Just a very, in general, one-dimensional Creighton team. I wish they would go to their bench a little bit more, utilize guys like Frederick King, who in spurts, they've been relatively solid. Now, it's a Creighton bunch that they do shoot 78% of the free throw line, so in a late-game fouling situation, they're in good shape there. But if you're finding yourself in a late-game fouling situation, you probably already have gotten the cover with an Akron team that has been able to do a good job with their defense. They have given up now 63 points or fewer in four of their last five games. And for Creighton, while they do rank 17th in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, that takes a massive drop-off when they're away from home. As in a roadside shoot-to-court environment, Creighton is averaging 18.9 points fewer per 100 possessions rather than when they are at home. And this Creighton bunch has scored 67 points or fewer in regulation in 7 out of their last 14 games away from home. So, DK Network right to pick. That is taking the points with Akron. I think that they're very live in this game, and I advanced them in my bracket. I also did semi-total 137.5. So, looking at the under and my write-up, that is taking the points with Akron. 741, 742 on the betting board. It is Duquesne and BYU doing battle as we now head out to the Omaha, Nebraska pod. And with BYU, they are between a 9.5 to a 10-point favorite total on this game, between 141.5 to a 142. Now, truth be told, this was an opener of 8. I did take the opener with BYU. If I had to bet it right now, though, this has just gotten a little bit too far out of control, as I did set BYU as a 9-point favorite. So here at a 10, it would begin to be my buy point on Duquesne, as this Duquesne team has actually been able to do a very solid job with their defense. They have become a top 85 team in all of college basketball in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. The biggest concern that you've got with Duquesne is that they're a very top-heavy team. Jimmy Clark III, along Data Grant, they've been able to combine for about 32 points per contest. They, between the two of them, are able to give you about 6.5 assists, 3.5 steals, both shoot 33.5% from three-point range. And then only one other player on the roster gives you north of 7 points per game, and that'd be David Dixon with 7.1 points per contest. But Duquesne just has an uncanny ability of just being able to hang around games because they've been able to do a good job in terms of making sure that teams don't get a lot of open looks from two, and they cut off the three-point arc. Away from home, opponents shoot just 30.9% from three, and this is a BYU team that over 50% of the shots that they do take from the floor, they are from three-point range. Now, with BYU, they also do a very solid job on the glass, and that's a little bit of an unraveling for this Duquesne team. Duquesne, about 180th in all of college basketball with regards to rebound rate. BYU is more in the top 40 with that regard, and for BYU, it's not like they necessarily have one guy that's just super dominant on the glass, but you just take a look up and down the boulevard for the seam, and of your top six scores, four of them give you at least 4.2 rebounds per game. Noah Waterman is able to shoot 36.5% per three, and you've got just a lot of equals in general when it comes to this BYU team. There are top seven scores, all but one of them shoot at least 35.9% from three-point range. You've got a trio of guys, Ali Khalifa, Spencer Johnson, Dalen Hall. They all give you at least 3.3 assists per contest, combining for about 12.5 assists between the three of them. Only turn the ball over about 10.5 times per contest. Going against a Duquesne unit that they do a good job of being able to get in passing lanes, but it's not like they're generating an amazing amount of steals other than Dadia Grant, Jimmy Clark. You don't have a ton on that front. Now, Dixon down low has been able to give you about 1.6 blocks per contest. Fusani Drame has been able to give you a few rebounds. And this is a Duquesne team that they do turn the ball over about 12 times per game themselves. BYU, not necessarily a heat-seeking missile with regards to turnovers, but this has been a BYU team that has been very explosive with their offense, and they've been giving up defensively. 70-plus points surrendered in four of their last five games. I do feel like this has a possibility of being close enough for some late-game failing where Duquesne is like down 7-8 points with a minute remaining. So I do think that this total just a touch low with the way that BYU has been so explosive, a top 50 team in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, even though Duquesne hangs their head on defense. Did set my total at a 143. I like the over, and with BYU, could only set them as a 9-point favorite, so won't take 10 here with Duquesne if I had a better right now. 743, 744 on the betting board. Illinois and Morehead State do battle, and Morehead State is an underdog of 11.5 to 12 points. Your total is between a 146.5 and seeing a straight 147 out there as well, and I did set my total more around a 146.5. So at the 147, that is my buy point on the under, and going to be willing to take the points with Morehead State. Need at least 11 to be able to take those points, but this Morehead State team, they do a really good job on the glass. Top 35 team with regards to rebound rate, and Riley Minix is a guy that really goes under the radar, averaging north of 20.5 points, 9.5 boards. Shoots in the neighborhood about 34% from three-point range, but overall has been able to do a nice job for a Morehead State team that has a backcourt that has been able to do a much better job taking care of the ball this year than last year. Typically, Morehead State turns the ball over nearly 13 plus times per contest, despite being one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball. This year, they're outside the top 3-10 with regards to total possessions per game. But Jordan Lathan and Khalil Thomas, these guys have been able to combine for about 20 points per contest. And Thomas, he's shooting 43.5% from three-point range. You've been able to have Drew Thelwell give you a little bit over 6 assists per contest as well. Going against an Illinois unit that is third in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis in a road-slash-shoot-court environment, with Terrence Shannon being one of the best scorers in all of college basketball, 23 points, 2 assists. I know that the off-the-court allegations have begun to linger. I don't think that they're going to spill out there on the court. He's been able to do a good job of being able to compartmentalize, and that's a conversation for a different podcast on a different day. But that said, you've also got around the seam Coleman Hawkins, Quincy Guerrier, 22.5 points. They both give you about 6.5 boards per contest, and they both shoot up well from three-point range. Both of these guys, north of 6'7", both shooting above 37% from the outside, but Morehead State is a tough customer with their defense, top 50 team in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and Morehead State is allowing opponents to shoot just 30.7% from three-point range when they're away from home. And this is an Illinois team that they give up a full 15 points more per 100 possessions in a road-slash-shoot-court setting rather than at home, and it seems, just for lack of a better term, it feels like they've given up on defense. They were a really good defensive team towards the beginning part of the season. That's went down the toilet bowl there, but I do think the Morehead State is going to get this game slowed down, get this game played at a little bit more of their pace. So I did set my total 146.5. You're at the 147. I like the under. And with Illinois, you can only set them as a 10.5 point favorite. So taking those points with Morehead State and the under. 745, 746 on the betting board. Drake is going to be playing against Washington State. Washington State is a underdog of a point. Seeing a point and a half out there as well. Throw it on this game between 137 and 138. And I do believe that Drake should be the favorite, even though they're the lower seeded team. I did set them as a 2-point favorite. So I'm going to be taking a look at the Drake. For Drake, they've just been a really balanced team in general. They do allow opponents to shoot 35.5% from three-point away from home, but top 85 team in terms of both points scored and points allowed on a per-possession basis. Not going to be quite as good as Washington State on the glass. Washington State, a top 25 team in terms of their rebound rate, and Washington State, to their credit, allows opponents to shoot just 31.6% from three-point range in a road-slash-neutral-court environment, but you also do have a Drake team that's going to have the best player throwing the floor. That'd be Tucker DeVries. DeVries is able to give you 20-plus points, 6-plus boards, 3 assists. I mean, he is doing everything for this Drake team. Meanwhile, for Washington State, it's all about keeping up with the Jones, Isaac Jones, who's been able to give you 15.5 points, 7.5 boards, part of the reason why this team is so good with regards to the rebound rate. And then you've been able to have a pair of guys, Andre Yagmotsky, the gentleman from North Macedonia, Jalen Wells, be able to combine for about 10 boards, 22.5 points, and Wells shoots it. Wells from three-point range, shooting about 42.5% from the outside, and both of these teams very smart in the way that they take care of the ball. Both of these teams committing fewer than 11 turnovers per game, but Drake does a little bit of a better job with ball control, and Drake just has a few more pieces in general in the backcourt to be able to help. You've got guys like Connor Enright, Cooper Garland that combine for about 5.5 assists per contest, while Enright shoots about 44.5% from the outside. Drake as a whole, they do shoot about 36.5% from three-point range. Going up against a Washington State team that they're shooting more around about 34% from the outside, I do think that the offense just is going to be a little bit better here for Drake, especially with Washington State when they're away from Pullman, scoring 15.2 points fewer per 100 possessions rather than when they are at home. And Drake is a team that travels relatively well with both their offense and their defense. So I did set Drake as a favorite of 2 points. I'm going to be looking at them in this spot, and also Drake a little bit closer to home in this spot as well. And I did set my total at a 136. Washington State, one of the slower teams at all of college basketball, I do think that this game becomes a little bit of a slog. So I do like the under, and I'm going to be looking at Drake laying that very small number. 747, 748 on the betting board. Iowa State and South Dakota State do battle from Omaha, and with Iowa State, they are a 16-15.5 point favorite on scheme between 135.5 and 136, and I did semi-total at a 139.5. I do like this total over. You've got a South Dakota State team that plays quite slowly outside the top 275 in terms of total possessions per game, but they are well outside the top 250 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, and they're going to get lit up from three-point range. South Dakota State, they allow opponents to shoot 35.5% from three-point range in a road-side shooting court setting, and I do think that Iowa State is going to be able to take it to South Dakota State. I set my line at a 17.5. I'm going to be willing to lay it with Iowa State. Iowa State does allow opponents to shoot about 33% when they are away from home, but I do think that they are going to be able to do a nice job of just being able to get South Dakota State out of rhythm in general, because for South Dakota State, it's a really all offense, not a lot of defense sort of team, and they've got Zeke Mayo, who's been absolutely incredible in the way that he's able to stuff the stat sheet. With Mr. Mayo, he's able to give you north of 6 rebounds per contest, throwing in their 18.5 points, 3.5 assists per game, but now you have to go up against both Keshawn Gilbert, a long team in Lipsby. They've been able to combine for 26 points, 9 boards, 9 assists, nearly 4.7 steals per contest, while Lipsky shoots 38% per thing. We all talk about the Iowa State defense, number 2 in all of college basketball in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. This is also a top 40 team in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, and for Iowa State, they've given up 65 points or fewer in each of their last 5 games. Meanwhile, for South Dakota State, this team has gone to at least 76 points in 3 of their last 4 games, so I do think that this is going to be a little bit more of an explosive, up-tempo game. You've got guys in Charlie Easley, Luke Appel, that combined shoot about 41% from the outside between the two of them. You've been able to get nearly 10 boards, about 24 points per contest for a South Dakota State team that doesn't get out of sorts with regards to turnovers, 11 per contest, but I could easily see Iowa State flipping the script there. We've seen South Dakota State, when they go up against pressure, have a tough time with it. I do think that that is going to be the case here. You've got a South Dakota State team that's relatively average with regards to rebound rate, and it's not like Iowa State is amazing with regards to rebound rate, but I think that they just do so much in the backcourt that it overwhelms the South Dakota State team. Semi-line at a 17.5. I'm going to be willing to lay it with Iowa State, and did set my total 139.5. I also do like this total over. 749, 750 on the betting board. Gonzaga and McNeese do battle from Salt Lake City. This is the final pod that we've got to preview, and with Gonzaga, they're a 6.5-point favorite. Total out scheme is 149, and I did set Gonzaga as a favorite of 9.5 points. I'm going to be willing to lay this number with McNeese. It's been an impressive season for them, being able to win 30 games, but how much of their metrics is based off of just playing some bad competition. With McNeese, they rank 10th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and they actually give up about 5.5 points fewer per 100 possessions in a road-slash-neutral-court setting rather than at home. But now you have to go up against a Gonzaga team that is all of a sudden founded on offense. 4th in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. That compares to McNeese, who's 11th in the country with this regard. But once again, with this McNeese team, you do have to have your question marks as to how much of that was just a byproduct of them playing against really bad teams. And you can say what you will about the WCC, but it still leaps and bounds better than the Southland. And for Gonzaga, they knocked off Kentucky in the month of February. For Gonzaga, they do have a pair of Twin Towers in Graham Ike and Tom Watson that do it all. They're combining for about 31 points, 14 at boards, with Watson now shooting 40.5% from three-point range. Gonzaga, top 10 team in all of college basketball in terms of fewest turnovers on a per-possession basis. And the man that's really been able to flip the switch has been Ryan Nembhard. Nembhard had a little bit of a tough time towards the beginning part of the season, being a pop threes, was turning the ball over a little bit too much, combined 5 turnovers in the last 3 games while doing out a combined 32 assists in that time span. I would say that he's been able to do a solid job on that front. It is a McNeese team that may have been one of the better teams in all of college basketball being able to generate turnovers, but not necessarily so much in those step-up spots. Shada Wells, one of the best players in all of college basketball in so many different aspects. 18 points, 4.5 boards, 4.5 assists, 3 steals. She's 40% for 3-point range. And as a matter of fact, for this McNeese team, out of your top 5 scorers, 4 of them do shoot at least 40% from 3. Lone exception, Christian Schulmade, who gives you 9.5 boards, 12 points per game. But with McNeese, even though they did knock off Michigan a little bit earlier in the season, that is a win that it aged like milk. You've got a McNeese team that I think in general is going to be a little bit overwhelmed by the sheer size, the sheer athleticism of Gonzaga. And I really like the way that Gonzaga comes into the NCAA tournament. We're going to fade that trendy dog. I did set Gonzaga as a favorite of 9.5 points. And did somebody total 145.5? Gonzaga last season was a bunch that really didn't play any defense, and they've been much more up-tempo in past years than they are this year. Gonzaga, currently a bunch as 53rd in all of college basketball in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, going up against a slow-tempo McNeese team. So it's a spot where I'm going to be willing to lay with Gonzaga, and going to be taking a look at the under as well. 751, 752 on the card. It is Samford. They play against Kansas. Kansas is a favorite of 7 points. Totals anywhere between 153 and 154. Kevin McCullough is not going to be playing in this game for Kansas, and that is a big-time issue. He is their top scorer, and the fact that this line was right around 7.5 to 8 when Kevin McCullough was thought to be in the fold, and then when he gets ruled out, it drops to 7, that to me is a little bit befuddling. I thought that it would drop even further, but all the more value on a Samford team that has a lot of depth going against a Kansas team that clearly does not. Akor has been very good for the Samford team. He's able to give you 15.5 points, 6 boards, shoots 44.5% from 3. And for the Samford team, each of your top 5 scores shoot at least 36% from 3. Each of your top 3 scores shoot at least 42% from the outside. It's very much a whole is greater than the sum of its parts approach. You've got so many different guys that just contribute minutes in general. I believe that you've got 12 guys that give you north of 12 minutes per contest. Meanwhile, for Kansas, who's now going to step up with Kevin McCullough being out the fold? You have to figure that the onus is going to be falling a little bit more on Marco Jackson, who's been only able to give you about 4 points, 1.7 assists per contest, has not shot it well from 3-point range. And as a matter of fact, for Kansas, the only guy that's really shooting north of 36% from 3-point range that plays meaningful minutes is DeJuan Harris. And Harris, he shoots 38% from 3. He gives you 6.5 assists per contest. He's just really skittish to shoot, though. He only gives you about 8.5 points per game. If he was a bit more of an assertive scorer, I'd be feeling a little bit better about backing this Kansas team. But, I mean, as you heard from our good friend Dr. David Chow in the last segment, we were thinking that McCullough was going to be banged up for this game. We now know that he's out. And for Hunter Dickinson, I think that he's going to be very far from 100%. When it comes to knocking off Samford, the way to be able to do so is to be able to hit the boards and to be able to make your three. It says the Samford team, they have been rough with regards to their three-point shooting defense. They allow opponents to shoot about 33.9% from three, though. This actually dropped all the way down to 31.8% when they're away from home. This is more like 36% when they're at home. So you've got a little bit of a reverse split there. And Kansas, honestly, they've been relatively solid with their defense. They do allow opponents to shoot 35% from three-point range in a road/shoot-court setting. But this is a Kansas team that their forte has been much more on the defensive side of things. 38th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. But they have not seen this sort of a swarming offense like this. Their biggest issue has been allowing the three-point arc, and if Hunter Dickinson is not fully healthy and good to go, you don't have a single other player on the roster. It gives you north of 4.7 rebounds per game. Johnny Furphy, KJ Adams, they've been able to give you about 21 points per contest, but I do think that this is relative doomsday for Kansas. I currently have them as a 3-point favorite. Now I'm willing to get frisky enough for the money line, but if you do see Hunter Dickinson like get ruled out of the fold, then I would be willing to take Samford on the money line. So as of right now, just a points play for me, but I did advance Samford on my bracket, and I did something I told still at 152. So I'm going to be looking at the under in the spot. I just don't think the Kansas does their part with this total line. In terms of the spread, I'm going to be willing to take Samford with a point. 753, 754 on the betting board. Nevada and Dayton do battle from Salt Lake City, with Nevada being a 1-point favorite. Total on this game is 136.5. With this game being played out there in Salt Lake City, it's almost a pseudo home game for Nevada. They're going to have a nice contingent here, and I do think that they're going to be able to take hold and take advantage. I did set Nevada as a 2-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number for the same team. They very much rely upon the three ball. They're shooting as a collective nearly 40% from three, top 10 mark in all of college basketball. And Dayton, they've been able to do a nice job locking down from 3-point as well in a road or neutral court environment. They allow opponents to shoot just 31.1% from the outside, but Nevada, they are 36th in the country in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage, and I do think that that's going to disrupt the flow of Dayton. So I'm going to be willing to back Nevada in this spot. It's a Nevada team that also does a good job of not allowing a lot of second chances, while they themselves 37th in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. You've got actually two very efficient offenses as Dayton. Them, in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, they've been a top 20 offense with this regard, but they do score about 13.5 points fewer per 100 possessions when they leave home rather than when they are at home, and it's going to be up to the big men to really be able to make some hay. Deron Holmes, along with Nate Santos, they've been able to combine for about 14.5 rebounds per game, and while you don't necessarily have that one true big man for Nevada that's going to be able to give you like 8-plus rebounds per game, Nick Davidson, he has been able to give you about 7 boards. That's a relatively solid job down low. I love the game of Keenan Blackshear. He does it all. 5 boards, 5 assists, 15 points per contest. While Jared Lucas, he's a nice just sniper of a shooter, shooting 39.5% per 3, 18 points per game. While the Satan team, they've been able to utilize Javon Bennett to be able to help flow the offense. He's been very rock solid with about 3.5 assists, 8.5 points per game. And he did return in the Atlantic 10 Conference Tournament. He was able to give the team about 24 minutes, but did not look fully like himself. He's battling through some injuries. That's something to be watching out for. Kobe Brea, Kobe Elvis, these two guys combined for about 20.5 points per contest, and Brea is shooting 49.5% from 3-point range. But once again, you do have a Dayton team that they just diminish a little bit in terms of their offense when they're away from home rather than when they are at home, and this has been a Nevada team that has been traveling with their defense all season long. As Dayton, outside the top 75 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, Dayton, they shoot right around about 38.5% from 3-point range in a road slash neutral court setting, so they don't necessarily travel the world's worst with that regard. But I do think the Nevada, their overall defense, the way that they lock down from 3-point range, going to be good enough to be able to get the job done in this ordeal. And for Nevada, they are about 57th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. So did set Nevada as a favorite of 2 points. I'm going to be willing to take them in this ordeal, and did set my total on 136. So you're at the 136.5, both of these teams being outside the top 250 with regards to total possessions per game. I do think that this total flies under, and we are going to wrap things up with 755, 756. 215 matchup between Arizona and Long Beach 8. Long Beach 8, a 20-20.5 point underdog. Your total on this game between 163-163.5, with Long Beach 8 set them as a 16.5 point underdog. I'm going to be willing to take the points. Now, Arizona, you got to figure, is going to want to atone for what happened last season. And for Arizona, this has been an incredible team on the glass. Top 5 team with regards to their rebound rate. Umar Ball is able to give you a double-double, 13 points, 10 boards per contest. But you've got Traore squared for Long Beach State, as Lacina Traore, more of a true low post presence, 12 points, 10.5 boards, doesn't really pop it from three, but does a solid job being able to contribute in so many different ways. And then Abakar Traore, he's a little bit more versatile, doesn't really shoot it well from three, but a block and a half, 12 points, 8.5 boards, 4.5 assists, love his overall game. Marcus Shiones, for a little bit of a lack of better term, is a chucker. He gives you 18 points, but he only shoots about 30% from threes. Very content to take a lot of shots, but you've been able to get Jaden Jones going. He's been your main 3-point shooter, shooting about 38% from the outside. Now, for Arizona, one of their biggest weaknesses is outside shooting defense, so you'd like to see Long Beach State be a little bit better with that regard. As Arizona, they do allow opponents to shoot 34.8% from 3-point in a road slash shooter court setting, and Long Beach State certainly has been giving up the arc all season long. Long Beach State, in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage, you are in 64th in all of college basketball. That 35.1%, same at home rather than away from home. And you've got Pell Larson, along with also Caleb Love, a pair of guys that will be able to give you double figures. They do a nice job of really being able to light you up. They have been able to shoot both a combined about 38% from three, though Love only shoots about 35% from the outside. Larson, more on 43% from three. And we did see Caleb Love struggle a little bit in the Pac-12 tournament. He can be a little bit of a streaky player, and he scored 11 points a few in each of the last 3 games. Arizona, they do turn the ball over 12 times for contests. That's a little bit more of a byproduct of them just playing so gosh darn up tempo. And for Arizona, they should be able to win that battle on the glass, but with Caleb Love being in a little bit of rough form with this Long Beach State team really playing for something as Coach Dan Monson got fired before the start of the team's conference tournament. Now here they are, and with Arizona having failed to get past the 70-point plateau each of their last three games, I do think that Long Beach State is going to be able to hold in there, and I do think that the offense is going to be a little bit more muted in this game. So I did set my total 156.5. I like the under, and I'm going to be willing to take the points. Long Beach State made them a 16.5-point underdog, and that'll wrap things up for the Thursday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. Big thanks to the Pro Football Doc himself, Dr. David Chow, for joining me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter /XTimeline at GNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters M, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please just send these into the timeline. Other way, that's fine, an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. Then from there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season. And then you come back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Turns out, a delightfully clean home can make for a delightful start to the day. At Mrs. Meyer's, everything they make is inspired by the garden. With plant-derived and other thoughtfully chosen ingredients, their cleaning products smell like a dream and work like the dickens, leaving your home sparkly clean and your to-do list tackled in no time. Goodness, there's no better feeling than that. Mrs. Meyer's, rooted in goodness. Visit MrsMeyers.com today.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.